their mistakes. Not every couple, not every person seems like they're focused on doing that. Two women were talking one day, and one asked, "Has your husband lived up to all the things he said that before you were married?" And the other woman said, "No, he's lived up to only one of them." And the first one asked, "Which one was that?" And the second answered, "The one where he said he wasn't good enough for me." You know, sometimes we just focus on the negative stuff. And we overlook the positive stuff. Jesus' teaching in Matthew chapter 7 and verses 1 through 5 must apply first to our marriage partner. There Jesus said this, with broad application, "Do not judge or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Now, you and I, just by the nature of the fact that we're human beings, and we kind of tend to be ourselves first, we can be picky toward other people, can't we? How many things do we find ourselves being picky about that are just nonsensical things? And at the same time, how often and how easily can we be blind to ourselves? How often can we be superior and self-righteous in just little, no-account kinds of ways? These attitudes and actions destroy loving relationships, and they build walls between wives and husbands. In Luke chapter 6 and verses 37 through 38, Jesus reinforced this teaching about not judging. He said, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." So Jesus uses other words, other metaphors to get across this idea that the way we treat others ought to be a reflection of the way we want people to treat us, the way we think about others, the things we say to others, the pickiness that we apply to others ought to be carefully screened by how we want others, and particularly our mate, to think about and speak about and treat us. Judgment destroys marital security. However minimal we may think that judgment is, judgment destroys marital security. Christian counselor Gary Smalley remarked, "Security comes from knowing your mate will love you regardless of your flaws and shortcomings. The things your mate does that irritate you often reveal your blind spots, the logs in your eye. Analyzing your irritations will often spotlight the things in your life that need to be changed." Boy, that's almost fighting words, isn't it? We would much rather have our mate change their way than for us to change ours. The trouble is they're thinking the same thing about us and the same thing about themselves. To find God's best in our mate in every trial, we really must seriously apply Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, where the writer says, "Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things." I have no doubt but that the writer penned those words because we don't think that way, not naturally. That's not the first things that comes to our mind. It's only those things come to our mind only when we're dating, don't they? And we see all the best about our mate, and we kind of block out the other things. It's only after we're married that all those negative things seem to crop up, all those things that irritate us about our mate. But all the time, we need to be thinking about these things. And as 1 Corinthians chapter 13 describes God-like love, it encourages us to think the best about those we love. Again, Smalley suggests one purpose of marriage between two sexes with their innately different and sometimes frustrating ways of looking at life is to make each partner more like Christ. It's true when you stop and think about it. All of the things that push our buttons, as we step back from them and as we look at them through the eyes of Christ, through the character of Christ, changes us to be more like Christ. He goes on to say, the irritation caused by these differences acts as sandpaper, soothing out the rough edges. So thank God for the ways your mate irritates you. I'm going to have to think about that one for a while. I guess you are too. Thank God for the way your mate irritates you. Well, you know, if he's right, if these are smoothing us out and shaping us to be more in the likeness of Christ Jesus, the Son of God, then praise God for those irritations of our mate. To ensure a secure marriage, I promise to listen and communicate lovingly. Will you say that with me? I promise to listen and communicate lovingly. In Genesis chapter 2 and verses 18 through 23, it says that God created woman as a suitable helper for man. But I think we know the reality if we've been married for a while. And that is that man is also a suitable helper for woman. God designed men and women to think, to desire, and to function differently, but complementary to each other in order to complete each other. It's well that we realize that in and of ourselves, as male or female, we are incomplete. God designed us to be completed by the opposite sex. One difference between males and females is in the way that we communicate. Nancy Schulins wrote this: if my house were on fire, here's what I'd save. Our wedding album, actual proof I was once a size 4, my grandmother's handwritten recipes, and a half dozen sheets of lined paper ripped out of a notebook, covered in red ink that's starting to fade, my husband's love letters. There are 3 letters in all, enough to last me a lifetime. A good thing, considering he hasn't written one since. In all fairness, though, that's not entirely true. It's not that husbands stop writing love letters. It's that they tend to look somewhat different from the kind that boyfriends write. Take one I found on the table last week. Hun, please be very careful driving to the barn. The roads could be slippery. Me. Or how about this one, pinned in green on the back of a Chinese menu left by the phone? Started the laundry and took the videos back. Here's some money. Don't worry about dinner. I'll pick something up. They don't have quite the same ring as, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. On the other hand, when you come right down to it, aren't they basically saying the same thing? She makes a good point, doesn't she? Sometimes our expectations and even our desires for communication aren't quite what we have in mind, but they may be the same thing, just said in a different kind of way. We who are husbands need to know, though, that women need their husbands to open their heart, to listen, and to respond to them. They do not need them to try to fix them as wives, and they do not need them to necessarily fix their frustrations. But just listening and being open is security. One husband thought he really had this right, and he put it into practice. His wife had just finished reading the book Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, and she sighed and said to her husband, sometimes women don't want men to fix their problems. Sometimes it's better if he just puts his arm around her and tells her everything will be okay. The next morning, her car had a flat tire. You hear what's coming, don't you? So her husband looked things over, and then he assured her that everything would be all right. He gave her a big hug and went off to work. He took it a little too literally. But it does point out this very facet, doesn't it? We need to be open and sensitive and responsive to one another. Ephesians 5 describes a husband's love for his wife as sacrificial. We need to bear that in mind. So we men must sacrifice our desire not to talk to or listen to our wives. I mean that seriously. You know, it's been said that men have 10,000 words to use in a day, and a woman has 20 to 25,000, and by the time the husband gets home, the wife's only halfway there. And so she's got the rest that she needs to convey to him. And he's done. But part of our sacrifice to our wives is being responsive to their needs. Research finds that a minimum of 20 minutes a day, a minimum of 20 minutes a day in true communication with each other decreases a couple's chances of divorce and greatly increases marital satisfaction. Just 20 minutes. 20 minutes out of 24 hours. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15 reminds us that we are to speak the truth in love. James chapter 2 and verses 12 through 13 calls for we who are Christians to speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. And then James wraps up with this one short but piercing statement: mercy triumphs over judgment. We who are husbands may think that our wife has nothing valuable to say after we get home, and that 10 to 15,000 words is just so much chatter. But maybe we need to listen to that a little more carefully and hear what's behind the words and woven through those words. That's part of our sacrifice to our wife, and it's well that we keep that very carefully in mind for the sake of secure marriage. Remember 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verses 1 through 3, where Paul says, "If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing." Maybe we need to kind of reword that into words that are more practical for us. Even though I go out and work hard for my family all day and come home exhausted because of it, but I have not the love to listen to my spouse and communicate sensitively, I have nothing. To ensure a secure marriage, I promise to serve my mate all of my life. Say that with me. I promise to serve my mate all of my life. Helen Rowland observes, "When a girl marries, she exchanges the attention of many men for the inattention of one." Sometimes that's painfully true, isn't it? And some of you undoubtedly have experienced it. Galatians chapter 5 and verses 13 through 14 tells Christians, serve one another in love. That does not bar the marriage relationship. If anything, it includes it. And as I said something earlier about the idea of beginning these attitudes and actions in our marriage. The entire law, Paul says there in Galatians 5, is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. Who is a closer neighbor to us than our spouse? These attitudes and practices really must start in our marriages. Similarly, Jesus taught in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, "In everything, do to others what you would have them do to you." And that begins with our marriage mate. When we practice these things with our mate, they become practices for our life with everyone we encounter. It may not be easy, and no one should say that they are. These are practices that grow out of discipline, out of making error, out of learning errors, and going back and trying again and again and again until we're getting it better and better and better. Bible commentator Matthew Henry wrote, "Eve was made by God not out of man's head to rule over him, nor out of man's feet to be trampled on, but out of man's side to be equal with him, under his arm to be protected, and near his heart to be loved." To serve our mate, you and I must learn their needs and never assume that we know what those needs are. I want to assure you, their needs are not the same as your needs. It doesn't take very long for us to learn that if we'll pay attention and respond to it sensitively and lovingly. Ephesians 5 and verses 21 through 33 tell us that men need to be needed and admired. The Bible calls that respect. And women need intimacy and security. And the Bible calls that love. The same text, Matthew 5, 21 through 33, calls for a husband's love, care, and feeding of his wife. But it also calls for a wife's submission to her husband's leadership in his home. And this mutual serving is serving the needs of our mate. 1 Corinthians 13 describes a serving mindset when you really look at these verses that Doug read to us earlier. A serving mindset. It is a selflessness that we apply toward those around us, beginning with our mate. It's a serving attitude of being kind and not being proud and not being self-seeking. Jesus is our model of servanthood. And so he speaks about this in Matthew chapter 20 and in verses 25 on through verse 28 when he says, if I can just get the right verse here, Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Jesus is our model of a life given wholly to God, wholly in God's service, wholly for the purposes of God, wholly to glorify God, wholly to do whatever task God had before him, whatever that might mean, whatever the cost might be. Have you given your life wholly to God? Are you obeying his will for your life according to his word, the Bible? Are you his? If you're not, we can't urge you enough to change that today, beginning right now. If we can be of help to you at all, we urge you to come forward right now as we stand and sing this song.